Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I have to admit that I am probably one of the most surprised people over the result on Sunday. I would tell you that only because last week, I believe my score prediction was 23-20 for the Ravens, and it ends up being 23-20 for the Patriots. Not that I'm looking a gift horse in the mouth. I obviously am thrilled that the Patriots won the football game. I think the thing that amazes me the most is the form and fashion in which the game was won. And we're going to jump into some of that. There's a ton of stuff, as usual, to get into today. And welcome inside Patriots Playbook for Tuesday. My name is John Rook. There are many things to nitpick about today as well. And certainly, as we normally do on Tuesdays, we call it Nitpick Tuesday. And you have your chance to basically let your feelings vent for a couple of moments on things that you didn't think went particularly well, things that you think are correctable, things that you just like, you know, geez, it shouldn't be that way. Well, that's part of what we do on Nitpick Tuesdays. We pick at the nits. Whether it's a win or a loss, we sort of, it would be great if it could be this could be that or what have you. So we got some nitpicks to go over today. Also have some superlatives to pass along because it was obviously a day of big plays, big stops, big moments for the Patriots, not the least of which was the hit that Brandon Merriweather put on Todd Heap. And I know that has dominated a lot of the conversation around the NFL over the course of the last 24 to 48 hours.
And bam, I got it.
Yeah. Well, obviously Todd Heap got it, and a lot of other guys around the league got it. And it certainly have been a huge topic of conversation in sports talk radio around these parts, as well as I'm sure in other parts of the country. And I want to make sure that the PFW guys talked about it, I want to make sure that you have your plenty of opportunity to get your feelings known on the big hit, on the helmet-to-helmet hits as it stands. This from, in case you hadn't heard, there has been a lot of conjecture. There's been a lot of, well, what happens with this? There's been some different scenarios played out as to, you know, the NFL perhaps stepping up before the week is out and handing down not just fines, but suspensions for some of the hits that transpired. And there were, what, at least a half a dozen of them, I think, over the course of this last weekend. So I want to bring this up to date here with you. NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Ray Anderson, clarified this afternoon that the league is not going to consider changing existing rules when it comes to fines and suspensions for what are called flagrant hits. All right, let me read what has just come down over the last couple of hours here in case you've missed it. Ray Anderson, again, NFL Exec Vice President of Football Operations, says, quote, "We need to get our players firmly in line with the current rules." This was while he was making an appearance this morning on ESPN Radio. He said, "The focus here is on defenseless players. What we're trying to make sure our players understand is that you should know the rules. The coaches know the rules. The players should know the rules. And if you are in violation of the rules, particularly one of those trying to protect against head and neck injuries, we're going to hold you to a higher standard." Anderson says there's no intent to change rules. His quote is, "We're just going to enforce the existing rules much more to the letter of the law, so we can protect our players. If it's an illegal hit under the rules, then you're going to be held accountable. We get the pushback all the time that what's a defender to do? Well, in these situations, you have to say the defender has to adjust his target area. This is something that Rodney Harrison, I thought, did very well and very eloquently on Sunday Night Football, on Football Night in America, on NBC on Sunday night. He said, you know, most guys in the past have been taught to hit and aim for the upper shoulder pad area. And then if you miss, or if the receiver misses, what's the first thing you're going to hit? Well, it's going to be the head and neck region. Instant penalty. Guys have to be taught to aim lower. Maybe it's going to take the crushing of about, you know, half a dozen sternums or something to, I don't know, before we're going to have to change that one. But he said it, and I happen to agree with that. I think it makes sense. You got to coach players up. You got to tell them you cannot aim at the upper shoulder pad region. You've got to go basically from the stomach down. And really, you can't go below the knees either. You can't go at the knees either, because that can be termed a flagrant. So it's got to be above the knee, but below the armpit, primarily, is what we're talking about here. If anything, you just got to hit him right in the gut. That's really the area that you should target, is right in the gut. Anderson was asked specifically about the helmet-to-helmet hit, of course, that Brandon Merriweather put on Todd Heap of Baltimore. And Anderson's quote is, "That, in our view, is something that was flagrant. It was egregious and effective immediately. That's going to be looked at a very aggressive level, which could include suspension without pay." Now, Anderson also noted that game officials have authority to eject players in those situations, and that the league plans to talk to officials so their authority to eject will be clarified. So this situation is clearly not going to go away. It's come to a head. I think that most reasonable football fans can probably understand that this is something that needs to be clarified, that needs to be addressed by the NFL. Bill Belichick had said earlier about when asked a comment on Merriweather's hit was it was a league matter, and he did not comment further on it. So he knows that it's in the league's hands. He wants to leave it in the league's hands because, frankly, he didn't want to say anything one way or the other that might inflame the situation and cause him to lose a player. Curious to note, folks, I don't know if the PFW guys talked about this or not, so Kevin, maybe you can help me clarify here, but curious to know that the Patriots did make a new signing for the practice squad today.
Yeah, it was
safety Ray Ventrone.
I think it's Ross Ventrone, his brother.
Oh, Ross Ventrone, excuse me. Thank you. I get Ray and Ross mixed up because they're obviously brothers.
Yeah.
But at any rate, he was with the Patriots during camp.
Yep.
And because James Sanders was inactive last week, so we really don't know what his injury situation might be. Plus, there's now a very real possibility that the Patriots could lose Brandon Merriweather for this week's game. And again, that decision has not, as of right now, yet been handed down. Patriots are obviously going to be down some bodies in the secondary. So Ross Ventrone is a member of the practice squad.
Yeah, and there was also some news today during the conference calls. Coach O'Brien pretty much confirmed what we all thought happened in the locker room in terms of the altercation with Randy Moss.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he didn't really speak on it too much, but he just kind of gave an answer. Mike Reese asked him about it. And he kind of gave the answer, like, you know.
What was the context in which the question was asked?
I can find the direct quote.
Okay, all right. Kevin's going to look for that. We'll play it for you here in a moment. And this was, who was it? Was it Scott O'Brien?
Billy O'Brien.
Oh, excuse me. Billy O'Brien, who has, of course, the offensive and defensive coordinators are supposed to be made available to local media on Tuesdays every week. And because the Patriots don't have any quote-unquote offensive or defensive coordinators, they agree to make an assistant coach of their choosing available to talk to members of the local media. Again, these are NFL rules and NFL requests. And so today was Billy O'Brien, and he was asked the question by ESPN Boston's Mike Reese. So we'll get that for you on the Randy Moss situation. Leave it to the Patriots to, you know, be right at the forefront of making, you know, off-the-field news once again each and every week. It's never boring around here, that's for certain. All right, so let me get back, before we dip into the Moss thing again, and concerning the flagrant hits, concerning the high hits, concerning Brandon Merriweather's availability, whether it's this week or beyond. Ray Anderson, again, of the NFL, saying that the league's intent is to limit flagrant hits. It's been met with some criticism from those, and I'm guessing people within the NFL, I'm guessing people in the media, and most certainly fans. It's been met with some criticism from people who fear it's going to change the game of football. Now, Anderson said he's confident players can adapt. The league has a responsibility to protect its players. But he said this is not about just the NFL. It's about safety at the professional level, at the college level, at the high school level, at the peewee level, because the NFL is the standard bearer. They are committed to safety at the highest level. So they're going to take all the criticism. They're going to take all the backlash against those that say we're acting too aggressively and we're not going to be apologetic, that they're not going to be defensive about it. They're going to protect the players. All right, so that's Ray Anderson again. If you hadn't heard that or hadn't seen that today, he is the NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations. Now, my question to you today is a very simple one. In addition to Nitpick Tuesday, and we are going to pick nits over the game, and I got some that I want to get to, and I know that many of you have already sent your emails in, webradio@patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline is open and available as well at 508-543-7482. But I'm going to ask you today to answer the question of the day, in addition to your nitpick on a Nitpick Tuesday. Is the NFL too violent? It's a very simple question. Is the NFL too violent? Now, you can come at me with whatever you want to come at me with. You know, hey, Rook, take your skirt off, yada, yada, whatever. That's not where I'm getting at. I'm asking your opinion, based on what we saw this past weekend, some of the hits that were put on there, and yes, Brandon Merriweather's hit has to be included. And I'd love to have your opinion on Brandon Merriweather's hit, whether or not you think it was the right thing or the wrong thing to do. I heard somebody today on a local talk show around these parts talking about how Brandon Merriweather should be kicked off the team. Well, to me, that's kind of like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, you know, okay, you got dirty bathwater, you're going to throw the kid out with it? Okay, he made a bad play. He made a poor choice, let's say. I don't know why you'd want to kick him off the team for basically doing what he's been coached up to do. Football is a violent game by nature. Football is an emotional game by nature. And when you get the emotions percolating at a high level and you get the violence and the physical nature of the game together, sometimes it becomes combustible. And I think that's what happens. Players have a split second to make a decision. When they see a play unfold before them, and I know this because I played defensive back for a brief while, never at this level, not even close to this level, but I know that guys have a split second to make a decision, whether or not, okay, am I making a play for the ball, am I going to make a play on the receiver, or am I just going to wait for him to catch it and make him pay? You know, am I going to try to whatever? You've got a split second basically to weigh three or four different things in your mind. Not unlike a quarterback who has a split second to, you know, check down on a particular receiver or go with the intended route. The game is a game of split second decisions. You're not going to have the most favorable decision made at every point. So I do believe that the NFL must allow for some of these decisions to be made by humans who make mistakes. But the game itself allows these humans to get worked up into a froth where, you know, they don't always make the right choice. Guys like Merriweather, I would argue, may not even be capable of making the right choice because of the culture in which they have been brought up in. Does anybody understand that? Guys are coached to be vicious. Guys are coached to be tough. They're coached to, you know, get up, you pansy, and walk it off. They're coached to do all of this stuff. That's the nature of the beast in football, no matter the level that you play it. And because of that, it's been pounded into their brains, and their first reaction is, especially when you play safety, strong safety, free safety, you know that your job is to do nothing but help out on receivers and make sure the receiver pays so they think twice about coming over the middle in your territory. That's a safety's job. So you've been coached up to think this, and you have a split-second decision to make. Ah, I can separate him from the ball. I can beat him to the ball. I can beat him to the ball. I can beat him to the ball. Pow! And all of a sudden, there's a guy that's motionless laying on the ground. Because all you're thinking is, I can beat him to the ball, I can beat him to the ball. Now, a lot of guys don't necessarily think that. I agree. A lot of guys see the catch being made, and it's kind of like, well, I'm going to blow him up. Or I need to impress the coaching staff. Guys who are especially fighting for their jobs. I need to impress. I need to show that I belong. And so they're going to go lay some guy out. And while the coaches are publicly saying, here's the problem. Here is what I believe the intrinsic problem to be. The problem here is that the coaches publicly, and I'm not talking about a specific coach, all right, but coaches and coaching staff and those who coach players, coaches say, oh, you shouldn't do that. All right, you're going to have to pay a price. Publicly. Privately, what do you think they're doing? Yeah, patting them on the back, saying, way to hit, and they're looking the other way. That's what they're doing. So the only way, to fix the problem is to fix it at the start. And that is the way that you coach these players up. You've got to teach them that they must aim, they must target a different area of a receiver or running back or quarterback's body. You just have to. You can't go chest up. It's got to be below the pads. And yes, it's got to be above the knees. It doesn't give you much of a target area, especially when you're going at, you know, 20 miles an hour yourself. And you got to make a split-second decision on whether or not you can beat the receiver to the ball, or you're making a play on the ball, or you're making a play on the man, or you're trying to separate him, you know, from the ball. I mean, trust me.
And it's the human instinct, John.
Of course it is.
To protect yourself.
Of course it
is.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
And that may not always be the best thing for the guy you're hitting, but you can't fault a guy for human instinct sometimes when he's bracing himself for the collision.
That's right. And so this is why you have to allow for humanity to have a point of view in this discussion. We're not robots. We're not machines. We're humans. Some of us operate at a higher level than others. But I'm just saying, do I really think that any of these hits from this past weekend should be suspensions? Well, if they do, so be it. I would be an advocate for issuing a stiff fine. I realize that Rodney Harrison said as much on Sunday Night Football in America. He did say, you know, hey, I put aside $50,000 a year. And he's told us this on this program.
Yep.
He's told us this right here in the playbook. He has said, I put $50,000 aside at the beginning of every year knowing that I was going to be fined for my physical style of play. And it did not keep me from doing what I knew I had to do, because I have to put that thought in receivers' heads. It was part of playing the game, part of doing my job to be the best defender I could be.
Yeah, Rodney would be singing a different tune if he was still sitting here and
no
still
doubt,
in the Patriots.
No doubt. And let me tell you this. For all these Patriots fans that say, oh, shame on Brandon Merriweather. Okay? We said 3, 4, 5 years ago when Rodney Harrison was going through this very same thing and he was being fined. It's like, you know, hey, you hate Rodney Harrison, but by God, you're glad you got him on your team. Well, why isn't Brandon Merriweather falling in the same category? Because he's doing basically, in fact, he's doing exactly what Rodney Harrison did.
Which he learned from Rodney Harrison directly.
Yes, he was a part of the team. He was a young player when Rodney Harrison was still on this team.
And it's been a knock on the Patriot defense the past 3-4 years since Merriweather's been here that they haven't been physical.
No question.
So he's trying to up his game. He calls himself, this is actually kind of funny, he calls himself the party starter sometimes. And he, when he's referring to that term, he's referring to sometimes you have to go and you have to hit somebody. You have to pop them to wake the whole defense up, to wake
right.
the whole team up, to wake the stadium up, to wake everybody up. And so I think sometimes it gets taken too far, John, but a lot of these guys are just trying to, like, make that Sports Center hit that they see on the highlights.
You know, and of course, when ESPN had the whole jacked up segment, which the NFL basically
which encourages hits like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it encourages hits like that. And of course, the NFL told them to stop doing that. I mean, we all loved
killing
it.
All the fun.
Yeah, we all loved it because we like seeing the big hits too. And that's why I asked the question today, is the NFL too violent?
And it's funny what ESPN did with this whole come on man segment they do, which kind of showcases the bloopers from
that's
the
right.
NFL instead.
Right.
So they're kind of like, okay, you're not going to let us show these, you know, great plays by.
So we're
going to
show the bonus.
We're
going to
show
plays.
You NFL players looking like idiots instead.
Right. So that's ESPN's way of kind of thumbing their nose back at the NFL. I happen to agree with that. You know, it makes for great TV, but I'm sure the NFL isn't totally 110% pleased with ESPN either, where that's concerned. All right, you can see we got a lot of issues to get into today. That's why I ask you, in addition to your nitpick today and any other comments that you have, is the NFL too violent? I would advocate for, at least based on what we've seen from this past weekend, anything that was considered flagrant, yeah, should be fined, and probably fined a lot. $15,000, $20,000, $25,000, more than just the $5,000 or $10,000 that you quote-unquote normally see in these situations. But also make the point of saying that from this day forward, anything that is deemed a flagrant hit is going to be suspendable by a game. And, you know, I heard somebody make this comment on a talk show earlier today, too, and I happen to agree with it 100%. So I'm going to share this idea with you right here, right now. I think that the NBA, I mean, the NFL should actually take a page from the NBA. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I think the NBA is pretty messed up as it is. But here is where the NFL could take something from the NBA and put it to good use. The NBA has varying degrees of flagrant fouls. You know, flagrant one, a flagrant two, whether or not a flagrant one. If it does, then it carries a potential, you know, game suspension with it. And if you get a certain number of flagrants or a certain number of technical fouls, then you have to sit out a suspension. I frankly think, and it's kind of like what the NHL does too, and even soccer. The soccer does this. You accumulate enough yellow cards, what happens, Kevin? You're Mr. Revolution now.
Oh, don't put me in that category.
Okay, but you accumulate enough yellows, yeah, what happens?
You get suspended.
You get suspended. Yeah. All right.
I think it's something like two yellows equal a red.
That is correct. Suspended. Actually, I thought it was three.
I don't know.
Okay,
at any rate. Shows how much we know about soccer.
Yeah, whatever. The point is that maybe, you know, you have to. The NFL has to start with a plan where, okay, your first flagrant is going to be a very heavy fine, and then your second flagrant within the same calendar year. By the way, okay, same calendar year means an automatic one game suspension plus a fine. I guarantee you, beyond the $50,000 level that Rodney Harrison specifically talked about on TV Sunday night, I guarantee you guys would start feeling it in their pocketbooks. Once they start feeling it in their pocketbooks substantially, because you're talking about not only a fine for the hit, but you're also talking about a game suspension, which means they're suspended for the game, which means they miss a game check. They miss a game paycheck. Now that, my friends, for a lot of these guys is a hefty fine. That's a hefty fine. That'll hit them where it talks, okay? That's where I think the NFL should move. Maybe that's something that's being discussed as we're now talking. But the NFL should move to a system that the NBA has, that Major League Soccer even has, that professional soccer has, that, you know, an accumulation. One's going to get you a hefty fine. Two's going to give you an automatic game suspension plus a fine. Three, maybe you raise it to like six games. Again, if it all happens within the same calendar season, I don't think you can accumulate from year to year. I don't think that's fair. Because I think you have to allow, once again, for human error and human judgment, as I've already explained. It's not a perfect science, but this may be at least a step closer to doing what's right, to protecting players, and to changing the culture and the mindset from coaches from the peewee level on up, that you, when you're going to hit, you have to make sure you target an area that can be hit without it being flagrant. That is what is of most importance here. I'm not advocating putting skirts on quarterbacks. Pardon me, ladies. I'm not advocating on playing flag football. I know it's a physical sport. Hell, I've been around this game, you know, in one form or fashion, since I've been in junior high school. Junior high school and high school, playing the sport. Obviously, college and beyond, covering the sport. So, I get it. Is the NFL too violent in your estimation? Webradio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline 508-543-7482. All right, we're going to get to some of those right coming up. But Kevin just was talking about how in Bill O'Brien's news conference today, our quote-unquote
conference call.
Conference call, thank you. Our quote-unquote offensive coordinator conference call. And was asked about the Moss situation and gave some clarification on it. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take a timeout, and we're going to come back, and then I'm going to let you hear Bill O'Brien's conference call with members of the media in its entirety. Because, again, if you pardon me if you've already listened to it here on the website. All right. You may have, and for that I'm going to apologize, but I'm going to do that here for those who like to listen to this program because it has to do with what we've been talking about here over the last couple of weeks here on Patriots Playbook, number one. And number two, I'm going to play it because I want you to hear its entire context. Okay. A lot of times when you play cuts and you play clips and you don't get the questions, you don't get the meaning of the question, and you don't get where the conversation's going, this is, again, and I'll repeat here for those that may be new to the program, we do this here in this program because we're not hindered by regular broadcast standards like having to get a break at a certain time and whatnot. I want you to hear the questions because it allows you to understand the context in which the question was asked.
And this is a great point too, John, because most of the people worldwide will not listen to the actual audio. They'll see on the bottom line or on ESPN.com, they'll see it in print.
Right.
And you don't get to hear how the question was delivered,
you'll
and also how the response was
delivered. You'll see a quote, right. And you need to understand the full context, all right? So let's do this. We're going to take a break here. Email webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. The Ace Ticket Hotline will also open up the Facebook account and take your wall posts and what the hell do you call
Facebook
it anyway?
Facebook chat.
Facebook chat questions. Thank you. God, I am absolutely
brain
dead.
We're both getting old today.
Well, yeah, it's partly because I've been so, you know, I've been trying to follow all of this stuff on the hits thing so carefully. And I wanted to basically come up with a different take because everybody's in agreement here. Oh, it's bad. We got to do something about it. I mean, you know, the hit to Heap was bad. You know, the hit to Massaquoi was terrible. I mean, you know, James Harrison should also be ridden out of town on a rail. I've heard all of it. I've heard all of it. And I'm not disagreeing.
I think it's just because.
But we have to approach this from a little, we have to approach this from a proactive level. How do you fix the problem?
Too, John.
Right.
And
right.
I mean, I think the public outcry, a lot of it has to do with the fact that there were three that happened in one weekend.
Right.
And usually that doesn't happen.
That is
They're
true.
They're spread out further.
They usually are. But it was a big weekend for big hits in the NFL. Don't forget the question of the day. Is the NFL too violent? All right. We'll get to Bill O'Brien of, yeah, see, that's what I expect out of you. Bill O'Brien's coming up in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff
so
may be.
What did you
learn
think
more
of
at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057. And you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Braves!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
All right, welcome back inside the playbook for a Tuesday. Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm going to share with you one nitpick before we get to Bill O'Brien. My biggest nitpick of the entire game on Sunday has to be why the Patriots still didn't attempt a 62-yard field goal at the end of regulation. I mean, that one just has me – I realize that, you know, Gostkowski was being probably judicious with his comments in postgame. But I can't even
verbalize it
because I just will not ever possibly understand why. You telling me – in effect, that the Patriots believe that a Hail Mary has a better chance than Gostkowski kicking a 62-yarder. By the way, with the wind at his back, that may be one of the simple, most ludicrous things I have ever heard in my life. There's no explanation. That was a blown decision by the Patriots. Now, do I think Gostkowski could have kicked it? Well, you know, 62 yards, hey, 1 yard away from the NFL record, okay? So I think we all realize that, you know, chances probably were not going to be good. But don't you feel like there's a better chance for something to happen there than to throw a ball up on a wish and a prayer down in the end zone? You have the wind at your back. I mean, this is when those type of field goals should be kicked. The situation was perfect for it. 4 seconds left. Play is going to take a minimum of 5 seconds, so the clock's going to run out. And unless you absolutely have no faith in your kick unit to protect the ball from being blocked, and even then from getting that returned for a score, you stand a chance to win the game in regulation. Now, yes, I realize the Patriots won the game and all's fine and well and la-la land. But this is Nitpick Tuesday, and that was huge. That was a blown decision. There's no way, shape, or form. You got a kicker that is capable. I mean, the guy is one of the NFL leaders in kickoffs going through the back of the end zone. And you're telling me he doesn't have a shot? At least a shot? At a 62-yarder with the wind to his back? Ludicrous. That one really, really got me. It's one of the biggest nitpicks that I've had with this team in a long, long time. Blown call. we might not have had to go in to overtime. And as it was, when was the last time a game the Patriots were in got down to the last 2 minutes of overtime like this one did? You almost had a tie. Oh, my God. Would people be screaming? Would people be screaming if that game ended in a 20-20 tie when you didn't even try the field goal with 4 seconds left in regulation? Oh, my Lord of mercy. All of you would have been screaming bloody murder today. How's that for a nitpick to start the day off? I've got others. Yes, I know the team won, and I've got some good things about the game that I'm going to share with you as well as we, you know, go between the lines, so to speak, and bring out some of the high water marks that you might have missed in watching the game or listening to the game or reading about the game. Got some tidbits for you coming up. In the meantime, let's get to Bill O'Brien, who, again, is the Patriots de facto, quotes around that word, offensive coordinator and play caller, as he met with members of the media, conference call at Gillette earlier today.
So what did you think of the job the offense did in their first game without Randy Moss? And do you think some of the maybe early struggles could have been just adjusting to not having a guy who's been on the field for the past 3 years?
I think, you know, the job we did as a team was a great job, you know, as far as, you know, just it was a battle and it was back and forth. I think the Ravens have an excellent defense, one of the top-rated defenses in the league in both, you know, a lot of categories versus the run and versus the pass. And I think any struggles that we had were more because of the Ravens than it was, or self-inflicted, you know, on our part, than it was, whatever players were on the field. You know, we're a game plan offense, so, you know, we game plan each week whoever's on the roster.
So just sort of mechanically, when a guy like Moss leaves, who brings, like every receiver, brings unique talents and does some things better than other people and some things worse, how much of the playbook, how many plays do you say, all right, well, you know, we can't use these anymore?
You know, I don't think we look at it that way. Each player has his own strength. So, you know, when Randy was here, there were certain things that, yes, we did with him that maybe Wes Welker doesn't do, you know, obviously. But at the same time, there are some things that we can still do regardless of who's here. It's just ingrained in the system of what we do and how we work. So, you know, I think it's just like anything else, whether it was injury or trade or whatever, the next guy steps up into that role and we see, you know, the skill set that he has and we try to put it to use out on the field for that opponent. You know, again, you know, each opponent is different. You know, one opponent's a 3-4 team or plays a lot of nickel or plays a lot of dime or has a different, type of personnel on the field as far as each individual defensive player, and we want to take advantage of this, that, and the other. So it's all based on the game plan during the week, which is what we're working on, you know, right now for San Diego.
Hey, Bill, two quick questions. I'm going to piggyback on you. First, what is unique about Deion Branch? And secondly, what did you see from secondary coverage that was different in this game, meaning Baltimore, than the other games? Were the safety shading in any way differently?
Deion Branch is very unique in his own regard because, first of all, his intelligence. You know, here's a guy that hadn't been in our system in a few years and came in and, you know, got in here after a red-eye flight out of Seattle and practiced right away when he got here on Tuesday. And, you know, had a pretty, I wouldn't say easy time because, like he told you after the game, he made a few mistakes in the game. But, you know, relative to where he was coming from, that's what's the most unique thing about him is, you know, his ability to come in here and pick things up right away after being away for a while. And, you know, I just think he's an excellent route runner with good hands, and you can play him in a lot of different spots. I'll say this, Baltimore, they did what they do. You know, they have a lot of, they have a lot of different schemes. They do a great job on third down, mixing up their fronts and their packages. The safeties, if it's blitz zero, they're down low. If it's blitz one, Zivakowski was 35 yards deep. If it was split zone 22, then the two high safeties were high. You know, they were 20, 25 yards deep. So regardless of who was in there for us, they were going to do what they've been doing for years there that makes them successful, and that's what they did against us. And sometimes we had success and sometimes we didn't. And that's what we've got to try to improve on every week.
Bill, how do you handle it now with Deion Branch going forward? Does he go back and try to learn, I don't know, the entire playbook, or does he do more maybe what he did this week, which is go game plan by game plan and learn whatever he happens to learn in a week?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, you definitely you come in every week on Wednesday morning and learn the game plan. So you don't hand him a brand new playbook and say, hey, you got to learn this playbook. You're now going by each individual game plan and what his role is in that game plan. So, you know, and a lot of that obviously involves the fundamental, the basis of the offense. So, you know, yeah, he is learning that, but at the same time, he's learning it by game plan.
So what has surprised you the most about Danny Woodhead? And you mentioned Deion Branch coming in and sort of on that red-eye flight, quickly acclimating and playing in the game. Danny Woodhead, similar in a way, and that he's contributing quite a bit, having joined the team on September 18th. So I guess what stands out to you and what he's been able to do?
Yeah, it's another good example of what's unique about certain guys, you know, to me and to us when they come in here and they're able to get acclimated right away. And Danny's another one of those guys. You know, here's a guy that came in and had never been in our system. And, you know, obviously with that position that he plays, that running back position, there's a lot involved there. You know, protections, route running, obviously the running game, the different reads in the running game. So, here, you know, that guy, intelligence-wise, is another guy that has come in here and done a great job for us to this point. And, you know, obviously there's game plans and different things that people are going to do to you know, against Deion, against Danny, against anybody that's out there, and he's just got to keep trying to improve every week and learn the game plan and keep getting better.
Bill, when Moss got traded, there was a story that came out about a talk you guys had at halftime in Miami. What was the talk, and how, I don't know, loud did it get, or was it something that happens all the time?
Yeah, I mean, that was 3 weeks ago. I mean, I'd say I've been coaching for upwards of 20 years, and, you know, that's what we do. We coach, and the players have input into what we're coaching, and so those, you know, things like that are going to happen. Randy and I had a great relationship. I really enjoyed coaching him, and you know, obviously he's moved on to Minnesota, and we're moving on to San Diego, but I wish him the best, and, you know, but coaching something like that happens. That's coaching football. It's a tough sport, and that's the way it is.
All right, guys, let's take two more. Bill, Aaron Hernandez has been terrific for you guys. I mean, entering that game, he had 18 catches on, I think, 20 targets, and then he had the two drops in overtime. How do you anticipate him responding from that based on what you've seen to this point?
He's come in and done some really good things. He's got a long way to go, just like any rookie. There's things that we're trying to get him to improve on every week, whether it's in the running game or in the passing game. But he's obviously come in and to this point done pretty well for a rookie. And it's what we thought when we drafted him. You know, we thought we were getting an athletic guy that could run and had some toughness. And, you know, he's got to continue to focus on the game, focus on the game plan, and he'll get better every week.
All right, guys.
So on the TV broadcast, they showed a quick shot of you and Tom talking on the sidelines. It was deep into overtime, and it looked like you guys were discussing some plays and whatever. I'm wondering, at that point, do you run out of plays that had been in the game plan during the week? Are you recycling, or are you and Tom talking about saying, like, well, you know, what else do we have we can use here? Like, what's going on in that conversation?
You never run out of plays. So there's a lot of plays, you know, I don't remember that conversation exactly, but we talk between every single series. We look at the pictures that are taken of the previous series. We talk about what that team's doing, and then I, you know, talk to the guys about how we want to open the next series, and I'm sure that's what we were talking about at that point in time. Obviously, you know, Bill's input on that, you know, Bill says we may want to open the series this way. It's usually a hell of an idea, and we'll do that. Or maybe it's Dante. You know, we all kind of work together on that, including Tom. So that's probably what the what it was about, looking at the previous series, what they did to us, how we can start the next series and kind of go from there, try to string some plays together.
All right, guys. Thank you, Coach.
Thanks.
All right, so there's Bill O'Brien from earlier today with his conference call with members of the Patriots media. You know, just sort of a little bit of an allusion to, you know, the quote-unquote discussion in the locker room from a couple of weeks ago with Randy Moss. Certainly not dispelling the fact that there were words between the two in the locker room, as we have been told by many different sources, or as you might have guessed yourself. It is water under the bridge, so to speak. We've kind of moved on from it. But at the same time, interesting to note that, you know, sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, that's just the way it is. When it seems to be real, and it's real enough to where it's almost tangible, where you can almost reach out and touch it, these are things that you have to pay attention to. So in that regard, maybe there's some validity to it. But, I mean, you know, hey, as we've already suggested, football is an emotional game. It's certainly a violent game. I asked you, of course, for the question of the week, whether or not you think the NFL is too violent. Too violent. Based on what we saw this last week, was it just a sort of a statistical anomaly of of all these things happening in one week? Or is this a byproduct of the sport in which we all love? All right, Brad from the Eastern Shores on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Brad, how goes the battle today?
Doing well, John, doing well. Listen to you a lot. Just usually I end up trying to call into the lunchtime boys. So, but I listened to that press conference.
Yep.
And if you listen to Brady on EEI on Monday and the coach today, they almost answered the question about, do you have special plays for Randy Moss?
Mm-hmm.
Verbatim. I mean, is this like a script that these guys get typed up and handed at the beginning of the season for every possible scenario?
It is what it is.
Very good, Kevin. I mean, that was absolutely phenomenal. I'm listening to that and I'm going, jeepers, this is identical to what Brady said. We have certain plays for each player and we use those plays to maximize that player's ability. It was like, good grief.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Does this not, though, add at least some validity to the fact that these guys actually do it the way that they say that they're doing it?
Oh, no, absolutely. Oh, I'm not trying to say that you know, they're just joshing everybody. You're exactly right. They have an attitude, and I think that is what makes Patriots football so phenomenal. It was so sweet to walk into work in Maryland on Monday compared to last January.
Okay. No kidding.
But this is what makes Patriot football different. This is the mindset. You buy into Patriots. You know, they were debating this afternoon about, you know, Mankins coming back. I have to disagree. I think the attitude will be, we're happy with the guys we have. You're only here because the current players' bargaining agreement says you have to come for at least 6 weeks. You've made it very clear you don't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Why would we stick you in the starting lineup? I mean, I don't see that Connolly. Now, I will agree, I think the sacks that Copen gave up, at least one of them, I saw Connolly blocking nobody and his head was on a swivel the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that Copen had as bad a game as it looked at first. But I just don't see, okay, Mankins is here, you're the starter. When this whole team this year, the taking down of the pictures, the letting go of Randy Moss, the benching of Butler, who was, you know, oh, he's going to be our next great cornerback,
mm-hmm.
and putting in Kyle Arrington, who was an absolute nobody. This whole team has stated this year, you will play the game plan or you won't play. And I think that's
really into solving the world's problems.
I think that's what you're leading to with your question of the day about is the league, you know, is this too rough? I've had heard people call Brandon Merriweather an idiot. Is he an idiot? No.
No, he's not.
Did he make a bad play?
Yes.
Yes. Did he launch himself?
Yes.
Yes. Was I don't purposely. I mean, I watched that play enough times. I think a lot of it is I've got to make this big play A to keep my job because mm-hmm. hey, he's fighting for a job every week.
No doubt about it. I made that point, Brad, a little bit earlier. I said, look, these guys when they're making a split second decision, you know, and they have, you know, just a tenth of a second literally to decide whether or not they're going to go for the ball, they're going to make a play on the receiver or get noticed. If these guys are fighting for their very positions on the field, I guarantee you the overwhelming urge to get noticed, good or bad, is going to win out.
Absolutely. And I think it's a big situation to the point of saying, I think I can make this play.
Right.
And now, the Harrison guy, I saw the highlights, did not see the whole game, so it's hard to see, you know the context without seeing the whole play develop.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I only have two words because I was 7 years old when Daryl Stingley
mm-hmm.
ended a phenomenal career.
Right.
But I would have taken that, I think I was seven. It was a while ago anyway. But, you know, I took all my Jack Tatum football cards. I didn't throw them away. I crumpled them up a million times
mm-hmm.
and unfolded them and crumpled them up again. Because to me, if you want to put a poster ad of this is a dirty play, you will lose a game check. I am all for that. I am all for that. But it has to be something where, hey, did Marvin Harrison, who was famous for catching the ball and right when he was going to get hit, collapsing?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're coming in at his midsection and he collapses, what are you going to hit? You're going to hit his head. But if you have a receiver like Merriweather and Heap and you launch high at the guy's head, it's going to cost you.
I think that, you know, Brad, first of all, that's a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up because I really hadn't thought much about it. But the if you're a receiver, if you're on the other end here, all right, and you're on the receiving end of some of these hits, and I think Keyshawn Johnson was talking about this the other day on ESPN. Your first thought is if you're going over the middle and you're catching a football in traffic, and you've got the ball, your first instinct is to what?
Pull down.
Yes, go down, get down. So if a guy is headed toward your midsection, as we've advocated and as is supposed to be taught, what's going to happen?
You're going to crack right into the back of his helmet.
Yeah, you're going to get a helmet-to-helmet hit, and that's going to get flagged.
Yep.
It's going to get flagged. Anytime you see a helmet in a helmet, it's going to get flagged, even if the receiver is the one that's really culpable in all of this.
Right, and
so
that's the difference between the quarterbacks and the wide receivers. There is no comparison. A helmet-to-helmet and a quarterback who is standing upright at 6'2", 6'3", whatever, and a guy launches himself at his head, he is only doing one thing. He is launching himself at the quarterback's head.
Okay.
But a wide receiver could be in one of 50 different positions at the time of impact. And if you're running full tilt from 6 yards away or 7 yards away, you don't know where he's going to be six, you know, three steps later.
All right, here's the only way you can legislate this. And I think it's a great point, and this is a good discussion. Because obviously what's going to happen now is you're going to get helmet-to-helmet hits, and yet the defensive back played it like he was supposed to,
right.
And then he's going to be out, you know, a big fat game check. The only way that you can really legislate this is you're going to get down, once again, to officials having to make an opinion on the field, or you're going to have to get to the use of replay, which is going to continue to bog the pace of the game down.
Yep.
The only way you can really legislate this is with intent, and the only way you can determine intent in this instance is if the defensive back rises up, in other words, launches up,
exactly.
Not launches parallel, not launches down, but launches up. If he launches up, then I can see you throwing the flag, suspension, loss of game check. Anything else, even if it's a helmet-to-helmet hit, really, fairly, cannot be legislated properly.
Exactly, because if you're launching up, you should have been making a play on the ball with your hand.
That is correct.
If you're launching up, you're going for one thing and one thing only, and that is to inflict damage, not to jar the ball loose. Because again, if the guy's extended and his hands are still above his head, karate chop his arm.
Right.
Don't hit him in the head with your helmet, for crying out loud.
Right. I think that's very good. Brad, you're bringing up some very interesting points. Very, very good
All
phone
right,
call
John,
today. Appreciate
good,
that.
Good job, Kevin. Good job.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate that, Brad. Brad on Eastern Shore. That's great. He brought up some great points. Very timely. Right on the money with his comments. It's going to be, yeah, very good. He deserves a round of applause. Absolutely. You have to remember that receivers, their first instinct when they're going over the middle is to get down with the ball. And as they're going down, whether it's a slide or whatever, I mean, how many times have you seen Wes Welker get down with the ball? I think that's what makes Wes so infuriating to other players, is because he's already close to the ground. Ooh, was that a shot at his height?
Well, it's like he beats you over and over again.
I know.
These little go routes. And
I
then
know.
You think,
then,
okay, I'm going to get him. I'm going to hit
him. I'm going to get him. I'm going to nail
you
him.
You never get your chance.
No, you end up sailing right over the top of him is what ends up happening. So, I mean, you have to realize that that is also a part of it. You can't fairly, I mean, here I am, I'm watching the Merriweather hit again. And he's got his, you know, he's got his arms out to his side, you know, trying to say, well, what? You know, to Bill Belichick. And Belichick's kind of looking at him like, what the hell are you doing?
Go sit down.
Yeah, really, go sit down. I mean, I just saw the hit again. And clearly he rose, he launched, he went up at an angle. And that's where I believe he is. Obviously going to be culpable, and, you know, we don't have any definitive word yet on what's going to happen over this weekend, but traditionally if a player is supposed to be suspended, usually that call from the NFL comes earlier in the week. Now, normally fines come on Wednesdays, and then the player finds out about it on a Wednesday, and then, of course, the league will make it official no later than Friday if it's a fine. If it's a suspension, it usually happens Tuesday or Wednesday because the team has to be able to prepare for the loss of the player. I think it's fair to say that if you don't hear anything tonight, or certainly by tomorrow morning, I think it's fair to say that a suspension may not be in the offing. We're all thinking right now that Merriweather's going to miss Sunday's game at San Diego. Even the Patriots are thinking that because of picking up Ross Ventrone, you know, and assigning him to the practice squad today. So I think we're kind of all on the same page there, but you know, the NFL, they may ultimately decide, look, we're not sure what we can legislate. We're going to have to make this very clear here from this point forward. And even Ray Anderson said that earlier today. From this point forward, he was very specific about that in his comments this morning. Who knows? They may go back and say, all right, Merriweather, you're going to get a game. You know, if Merriweather gets a game, then I think James Harrison also gets a game. He should.
It's just unfortunate for Patriot fans that it's kind of like one of your players is mixed up in this case this weekend.
Yes.
That causes the leap from fines to suspensions.
Right.
Because we haven't seen suspensions for hits like this.
No, we haven't. And so that may be why the NFL is hesitating
so
on suspending now, because
make an example
they know that the popularity of this game revolves around the violence and the physical nature of this game, which is why, again, I asked the question today. Is the NFL, in your mind, too violent?
And I almost feel like this is an issue that should be taken care of, like, during the meetings in the off season. Okay, we're going to make this part of the new rule changes. We're going to, you know, give this, because they do. They give seminars.
Right.
The officials give seminars
right
to every team.
And they're going to have, and even so, Anderson mentioned earlier today that we have to do a better job of making sure that we have officials enforce it by the letter of the law.
But to kind of change the way you kind of judge these hits in the middle of the season, doing it on the fly, it's kind of something that we haven't seen before.
Well, I'm looking at Harrison's hit on Massaquoi again. There's no question he went up. He went high.
Yeah, it was a decleater. All right.
I mean, you know, it was just, I mean, his body went limp because he went up. Now, again, Massaquoi, when you look at it, he's trying to slide down on the play. He is trying to get down. And so this is what Brad and I were just talking about. He's trying to get down on that play, and quite frankly, he just didn't get there quick enough. I mean, now the hit on Jackson, frankly, of the Eagles, I don't think that was a bad hit. I think that was a legal hit, the more that I look at it. I'm looking at all these hits here, and they're running quite a few of them through here on NFL Network and also on ESPN throughout the course of the day today. I think the one on Massaquoi, I think the one on Heap were probably the two that could be considered the most flagrant and therefore the ones that could be suspendable by their actions. Everything else looked to me to be pretty solid and just a violent hit, and that's the nature of the sport. I don't know any other two ways to put it. I mean, you can't change the rules because then you are taking away from the game. Maybe that's what ultimately is going to be decided. I mean, time is only going to tell here. And I think that's all we got. We got time, we got to wait. All right, timeout time, and then we come back with some superlatives and some nitpicks from Sunday's big win over the Patriots. I mean, a big win over the Ravens for the Patriots, 23-20 in overtime. I mean, goodness gracious. Great game, but it seems like on Tuesdays now, and the Patriots are playing great games, we're talking about everything but the game itself. And yes, I realize that maybe sometimes, you know, you can talk too much about the game and you're ready to turn the page and you want to go on to the next week, and I understand that. This is going to be a long week, though, because we got until 4:15 Eastern time on Sunday afternoon, you know, for the San Diego Chargers, and we will certainly jump into the Chargers by hook or by crook tomorrow and on Thursday's program as well this week. And the Chargers have their own issues right now at just 2-4, and believe me, I don't think any of us thunk before the season that that was going to be, you know, a problem.
Go f*** yourself, San Diego.
Well, I think that's kind of a universal thought right now. But then again, I the Chargers always have trouble early in the year. They always have trouble early in the year. And I just wonder if this year may be the year that, you know, the early season doldrums finally cost Norv Turner his job. And that's a question that we will explore before this week is out. Does that make the Patriots' chances to win on the road next Sunday any better or any worse because the Chargers are backed up against the wall? They've got some injury problems of their own going on, some players that most likely will not be available on Sunday. Looks to be an interesting matchup. All right, we're still getting into that. Emails coming up inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, don't go yet, sir.
But the light turned green.
Well, you don't go till I say so. You play by my rules. My rules. Ball start, loss of 5 yards, still first down.
What are you talking about?
Unsportsmanlike conduct, 10 yards.
Unsportsmanlike is 15 yards.
Move the chains.
You are a crossing guard.
Personal foul, 15 yards.
And stop blowing that whistle.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Delay of game,
but,
5 yards,
but
first down.
But you're not...
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A., Bank of America, N.A., member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots Instant Game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days. We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots Instant Game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday, a nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. Got some other nitpicks to share with you. Obviously, the 62-yard field goal non-attempt at the end of regulation was my biggest, most major nitpick I've had in some time. Christopher sends a nitpick as well. And he says, this is Chris in Seattle, he says, I don't agree with the decision not to kick the 62-yarder. Gost has definitely got the leg, and I honestly believe the odds of making the field goal are greater than that of the jump ball. I've heard Belichick was saying that they didn't want to risk a blocked kick, and even worse, a run back. But that's a rare thing unless it's us blocking a Miami kick. I have also heard the wind was a factor in the decision. I accept that, but even with the wind, I think the odds of getting the field goal are much greater than running into the end zone where, of course, you're going to be totally outnumbered by defenders, most of whom are taller than 5'9". I think it's indefensible. I don't know why they didn't think about it. To get it blocked and get it run back, I mean, come on. Come on. You know, and I loved how Gostkowski was sort of, you know, political about it after the game. Because he's like, you know, it's just my job to go in there and do whatever, you know, I'm told I'm supposed to do. If the guy has any athletic gumption at all, you know he's on the bench saying, let me in, coach, I can kick it. I can kick that. I can make that. I can do that. Let me do this. Let me get out there. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to kick it. You know he's doing that. And you cannot tell me that the players themselves didn't want him to kick that or like try that. Who wants to, first of all, okay, one of the things that it's not a nitpick, but one of the things I was most impressed with on Sunday's game is the fact that I thought the Patriots matched the Ravens' physicality. You know, the Ravens clearly are, I think, right there with the Steelers in terms of being the most physical, powerful teams in the NFL, at least to this point in time. And I don't think, unfortunately, the Jets are far behind. But here's the point. I thought the Patriots in the second half matched that physicality and that intensity that the Ravens had, and I really believe that was a factor. And that also may be a hidden factor in the reason that, you know, Merriweather did what he did. Because he knew that we, and I use the collective we as the Patriots have to send a physical message to the Baltimore Ravens that we will not be pushed around. Therefore, I'm going to go find a head when I can get it.
I think that was part of the motivating factor, too, behind when Brady got up in Terrell Suggs' face.
Yeah, I loved that, by the way. Good for Tom. You know, good for Tom to yell back in a linebacker's face, you know. And I saw several players and several coaches on the Baltimore sideline who were in angst the whole game over some of the physical play. Not only after Merriweather's hit, but whenever there was John going on. And Vince Wilfork even said as much after the game on Sunday. He said, you know, I don't necessarily condone what Merriweather did, but at the same time, we as a team seem to get energized by that. I don't think you can discredit that at all. I think that counted for something.
He's the party starter.
He is. Brandon Merriweather is the party starter. He is. Whatever you want to say, maybe the Patriots should have started the party earlier. Okay, I'll grant you that. But whatever it took, somebody stepped up to make a play. You know, my biggest concern, my biggest nitpick with the defense overall this year, gang, is the fact that we don't have any players defensively that are capable of stepping up and making a play. We got some nice pieces to the puzzle. We got some good complementary parts. We got some decent players. We don't have playmakers on the defensive side. Regardless of what you thought about the tail end of the game and, you know, shutting down the Ravens over the last five possessions or whatever it was, we don't have playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. Not like we have an offense. We don't have those on defense. Merriweather, maybe somewhat ill-gotten here, but Merriweather was at least trying to step up and make a play.
Yeah, the only two guys that have made real big defensive plays this season have been Chung and Guyton in the opener. And to me, I can't really think of another game-changing play that's been made.
No, until what Merriweather did. And again, it may have ultimately be deemed illegal what he did. And if so, all right, he's got to pay the price, and the Patriots as a team will have to pay the price. And hopefully they won't do anything in the future that will cause harm to the team. Ain't no I in team. Ain't no we either.
We're talking about one-hit wonders, too, when we're talking about Chung and Guyton. I guess I could throw Ninkovich in there, too, because that was a heck of a game he had in Miami, too.
Miami.
Those three guys, I guess, have shown flashes of being able to make plays.
Okay. But again,
consistent playmakers.
No, we need consistent playmakers. We need several guys to step up and be able to make plays. And Merriweather was probably trying to do that. He was trying to step up and make a play.
I think you and I can agree that he has the physical gifts to be that type of player.
He just is not as quite as football smart, I think, as we'd like him to be. Sometimes when he makes a gaffe, it's a really big gaffe. But you can't underestimate his emotion. You can't underestimate his heart being in the right place, I don't think. And he was trying to make an emotional play, if not a physical play, which is obviously what he did, and he may end up paying for that. But he was trying to be, as you suggested, the party starter. And it succeeded. It worked. That's the bottom line. It worked. Now, could somebody really be hurt badly? Well, sure. Can we condone it? No. Again, why I kind of asked the question today, is the NFL too violent? Are we getting overboard here?
It's a fine line.
It is a fine line. And I think it's going to ultimately be very, very difficult for the league and for the officials in the heat of the moment during a game to be judge and jury in determining what that fine line really is.
Let's not forget, there are going to be physical plays and hard hits that injure people that are going to be completely clean.
Right.
Because that's just the way the game is played.
Right.
And I think that's what you can't take away from the game. The game needs that. That's what makes football great.
Well, that's why I think football fans are football fans. Because they're getting something they can't really get anywhere else. Why do you think, by the way, MMA has become so popular? Because it's raw.
That's a great point.
It's raw, brutal, no holds barred, few holds barred, physical, destruction. It basically, we have turned back the clock on Father Time to the days of gladiators, and the Christians being fed to the lions.
Barbarianism.
That's exactly what we've done here. Now, I'm not being overly grandiose here. I really believe this. I believe that, the more brutal, it's the old rubbernecker theory. The big bash up on the other side of the highway. Why do
it's
people
like
slow
at a
down?
Car crash. You can't turn away.
That's right. Why do people slow down and look at it and we all scream bloody murder over it? Because it's there. And we as a society, I really believe, are thinking, oh, poor bastard, glad it's not me.
Exactly.
What is it about humans that we have to turn and look? We're drawn to it like a bug is drawn to a neon light. And hopefully a bub zapper.
It looks so fun, and then bzz, it's all over.
It's all over. That's exactly right. And that's how I believe the NFL is to us. We're the bugs, and the NFL is the bug zapper. And now, what are we about to zap here? Are we about to zap, the physical?
Zap all the fun out of it.
Yes, that's exactly. Are we about to zap the physical nature of the game? Are we about to zap, the popularity of the game? And as Kevin just said, are we about to zap the fun out of the game? Is the NFL too violent? Webradio at Patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline 508-543-7482. Chris also says, my nitpick, he says, bottom line, I thought it was a fantastic win, critical to the psyche of the team. The defense may not quite be there yet, but they should. They showed real grit in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Now, I'm starting to really like how young they are. Same with Brady's surrounding cast, and a very warm welcome back to Branch. Lastly, if hits to and from the head are acceptable, the NFL is too violent. Head-to-head contact isn't a competitive game. It's brutal. Okay. I think that's probably putting it in a nutshell. I think most people would probably tend to agree with that, Chris. If head-to-head hits are acceptable, the NFL is too violent. that does have to be regulated. It needs to be regulated. Marvin sends his nitpick. Marvin in Kernersville, North Carolina. John, remember after the Jets game, my nitpick was the 53-second touchdown the defense gave up right before the half. I had said that the Pats' defensive dog had no fight in them, but this week it looks like the Patriot pups learned how to bite and got a little fight in them after all. Now on to this week's nitpick. After the game, I was going to the store and heard the great old tune by Pat Benatar, We Belong Together. No, we're not going to cue that one up, sorry. And I instantly thought of Dixon, Branch, and the Patriots. Deion Branch, I think you're saying here. The two of them clearly belong together. So my nitpick for this week is the 4+ years we had to play without him just because Bill wouldn't pay him. I truly believe that if Branch and Brady had stayed together, the two of them could have been as good as Manning and Harrison, or maybe Manning and Wayne. We lost all of the great plays these two guys could have had thanks to Bill because they just wouldn't pay him. Now that's real nitpick. Yeah, I would agree, Marvin. That actually is a pretty good nitpick. And we are left to wonder whether or not, yeah, we would have had any more success than we already had. You know, of course, we didn't win any Super Bowls with him gone, but, you know, who's to say 2007 might have turned out differently? We'll never know, unfortunately. You're right. Nathan says, speaking of the spearing, did you talk about the Steelers idiot Harrison's comments about hurting players on hits? Not sure if you have talked or have an opinion on that douchebag. other than... That's what Nathan said. Yeah, we just referred to it offhand, and the fact that I kind of felt like, you know, Harrison's hit on Massacoy was probably at least as bad because he did go up. He aimed high. Yes, Massacoy was trying to get down, but he did go high. And though if Merriweather is suspended, then probably Harrison deserves a suspension for that particular hit. His other one, not so much so, I don't think. Francis in the UK says, just read a report on ESPN that Oakland could look to trade Asamoah. Surely we would be interested in trading for him. He would instantly boost the secondary and make our defense a lot better. What do you think? Well, if that is actually true, and I haven't seen that, Francis, so I can't speak to it directly. When I have some time, I will do some searching and see what I can find on it. But if that is the case, I mean, you have to go to, well, what would you take for him? You play, would you take? What would it take to get him? I mean, you know, you got to feel like, you know, first of all, the Raiders having been, you know, probably feel like they've been burnt by the Patriots before, although they did pick up, you know, Richard Seymour, I think, for a song and a dance. Maybe, you know, if you could get him for, well, let's see, we still have 7 picks in the first 2 rounds next year, right? Yeah. 7 picks in the first two. First four rounds. So we still have 7 picks in the first 4 rounds. The guess would be here that they'd probably, if they could figure out a combination of anything but ones,
they'll trade them.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They would trade them. And I think the Patriots should go for them. Why not? Why wouldn't they? I don't know what his contract situation is, so I'm sure that would probably have an ultimate bearing on it as well. I don't have that info in front of me. And while we're sitting here talking to you, trying to do a show, and it's hard to do a search and talk to you and make sense at the same time. Not that I really make sense anyway, but, you know, you understand the point here. Maybe somebody can actually do the search for me and send me the note here via email, webradio@patriots.com. But, yeah, I think it would be a great pickup. If they could do that and they could do it for a pick or two lower ones, I'd be all for it. Absolutely. Scott in Tucson, I've been watching the show, wanted to know if you had a chance to check it out. This week's show will be showing 30-21. What do you think Brady will be on this list? What are we talking about here? Oh, the NFL's top 100 show. Yeah. Also, what did you think of Deion Sanders' rant about being number 34? Did not see it. But Scott says he'll see the PFW guys in San Diego. Thank you, Scott. Let's go with Christopher's email. He says, I'd have to say that if Merriweather wants to make those hits, he's got to use his shoulders. Just got to get smarter about his hits. A pick would have been more productive right away, but that hit Todd Heap will not forget, nor will the rest of the team. Other teams will look at Merriweather and not want to go across the middle with him on the field. This helps your team in the long run. Rodney Harrison didn't have to hit every game, just once in a while, needed to pop someone hard. I don't accept the helmet-to-helmet, but the hit is absolutely necessary instead of the pick to show the bully Ravens that we will not be pushed around. You know, that's Christopher, that was something that we did talk about. And that, as we sort of talked about a little bit earlier as well, you know, Vince Wilfork said it was a party starter. And for whatever reason, you know, things picked up in intensity, if not physicality, from that point on. Was it the right thing to do? No. Probably not. But did it serve his purpose? Oh, there's no question that it did. And it did send a message to the Ravens, certainly sent a message to Todd Heap. And the Ravens, you know, they're a physical team anyway. And they came into the game certainly feeling that they could push the Patriots around. Not a doubt in my mind about that. The Ravens pride themselves on being one of the more physical teams in the league, and that's fine. That's great. But the Patriots matched them in physical play, blow for blow, in the second half. And while I do believe that, you know, some of the reason behind, you know, their offensive ineptness in the late in the game and in overtime, I'm talking about the Ravens now, some of it was due to the fact that I think they made some very poor play call decisions. I also believe that the Patriots matching them in physical play wore them down a little bit. I believe that. I believe the Patriots defense did a lot of growing up. They're not there yet. They're not there yet. My other nitpick, gang, in addition to not going for the 62-yarder at the end of regulation, my other nitpick is Patriots secondary, while improving, is still way too soft. Way too soft. There's too much room given up between the receiver and the defensive back, and you can blame, you know Kyle Arrington for it somewhat, but I mean, you know, frankly, I'm not sure we can blame him or anything. Whatever we get out of Kyle Arrington is a bonus this year, because he's not really supposed to be in there. That's Darius Butler's job, or more importantly, it could even be Lee Bodden's job, and he's hurt, and Butler right now is on the bench because he's just not playing well. He stinks. So Arrington's got the job de facto. You know, we saw Devin McCourty make one great play late in the game as well. It was really his best play and only good play, I thought, that he made in the entire game. But at least he came up big when the time requested that he need to come up big. But he got beat several times. He was very soft. Got, you know, obviously interference penalty, two of them, I think, as I call right a call off the top of my head, called on him. And I think a lot of that is because he's having to close too fast and he's running into receivers. You're playing too soft. You've still got to learn to be able to look back when you can. He did that on that last play that he was able to tip away. So rather than get beat deep, I get the impression that our defensive coaches have told the defensive backs to just play deeper and keep the receivers in front of you so you don't get burnt over the top. I can understand that theory to an extent, but now it's time to start making a move the other direction here and coaching these guys and showing them how they can, you know, how they can make the plays on the ball. Know what the checkdowns are. Do your film study. Know what the tendencies are with the opposing quarterback. Know the routes that the receivers are running. And then you might be able to make an educated guess as to the play you should be making and how tight you should be playing on the receiver. Now, a defensive back normally isn't going to play a receiver terribly tight unless he's just, you know, got all kinds of, you know, makeup speed talent. Because if you've got your back to the football, you don't know when the receiver can stop and come back with the ball. You run smack into him, you're going to get an interference call, you know, a penalty against you. You have to start off a little soft and then hope that you can make up the time and make up the difference. And I think our defensive backs are too soft initially. It's not a major nitpick, but it is a nitpick nevertheless. Lyndon sends this on a Sumwas contract. Thank you, Lyndon, in Colton, California. He says, in regards to a Sumwas, it's been reported on several websites that all Raiders are available for trade. I'm guessing the Pats wouldn't do this because of his contract. In 2010... $755,000 base, but $8 million roster bonus due on March 5th, $7.83 million option bonus on March 19th, 2011, $2.105 million club option, 2012, $3.455 million voidable years, 2013, $4.8 million, 2014, $6.1 million, 2015, free agent. My wife and I are headed to the Pats Chargers game this weekend for our anniversary. Whew! Her idea? Whoa! You're a lucky guy, Lyndon. I'm a whole lot more optimistic about the game's outcome than I was when we bought the tickets back in August. Earlier this year, you told me that we'd be playing without Moss, Falk, Bodden, Warren, and Mankins against the Ravens and the Chargers. I'd have to say that we'd lose both of these games. That's a very good point by you. Now I think if we have a really good chance to beat the Chargers, especially if Gates, ankle, and Floyd hamstring are limited or even available. Lyndon, thanks for it. And you're right, his contract is pretty heavy. I thought it might be, and I appreciate your sending that. So thank you. Doesn't mean that it won't happen. I just think it's probably less likely that'll happen. Let's stick with Howard here. Wow, what a game. Very reminiscent of the earlier glory years of this franchise. This young D is making the stops they did down the stretch and into overtime was just great. Hopefully this win propels them forward to bigger and better things. You know what? Let's give the defense some credit. We've been slamming on them all year so far. They did grow up quite a bit in that second half. They did grow up. They're not there yet. They still have a ways to go. They're still too soft. But at least we saw progress. I think we could all see the visible signs that they're beginning to grow up, that they're beginning to understand, at the very least, what they need to do in order to be an effective defense. I don't think the Ravens are an offensive juggernaut by any stretch. And even without a guy like Gates this next weekend, and without Vincent Jackson, you know that the Chargers are going to be a more than capable offense. I think they're still first or second in the league in total offense. So this will be the ultimate test of the Patriots defense being a bend but don't break type of defense this week. They need to show that against San Diego to keep San Diego from winning at home. I'm sure we'll talk more about that as the week progresses. All right, Howard's nitpicks. Number one, time management at the end of the second quarter. Worst time management I have seen by Belichick in his tenure here as Patriots head coach. I understand the O was struggling and you didn't want to give the ball back to the Ravens because the D was struggling at that time too. I also understand they were getting the ball to start the second half, but I hate when a team plays not to lose instead of to win, in this case to try and put points on the board. I haven't agreed with you, Howard. That was nitpick number three on my list, and you took it from me, but I'll be happy to give you the credit. Time management. And I kind of throw really the non-try of the 62-yarder in there, but that really had nothing to do with time. There were 4 seconds left. Time was called. Get the field goal team on, and let's kick the damn thing. But you're right. They decided rather than, you know, they could have stopped the clock before they punted the ball late in the second quarter and saved a good solid 25 to 30 seconds right there. So when they got the ball back late in the quarter with, what was it, like 29 seconds left, I think, or something, they could have had almost a minute left on the clock, which is plenty of time to drive down the field and try to kick a field goal. Plenty of time. And then when they went down on a knee, the fans here at the stadium booed. And I didn't blame them. I didn't blame them one bit. If I were a paying customer, I would have booed too. That was not the right call to make. You totally blew that time management. Howard says nitpick number two. I agree with you on not going for the 60-plus yard field goal. Why not give it a shot? Number three, stupid penalties like Merriweather. Why lead with your head? Why can't they wrap up and tackle instead of trying to go for the ESPN highlight reel? I fully understand they want to intimidate, but that can be accomplished with a good tackle leading with the shoulder, wrapping up and driving the player into the ground with a good solid tackle. No, see, that's where I'll disagree with you, Howard. That cannot be accomplished there because that won't get on the highlight reel. We all may say, great tackle, but unless somebody's head flies back or the helmet comes off, or in this particular case, the mouthpiece goes flying like it did for Todd Heap, not going to make the highlight reel. And these guys are trying to make the highlight reel. They're trying to get noticed. They're trying to get people like us to talk about them, which we are doing. He says, not much else considering the initial returns regarding the return of Branch looked very good. 9 catches for 90-plus yards with just being here 4 days? Can't wait to see what he's like when he gets better acclimated to the system. Howard in Connecticut. Very good, Howard. Thank you for the email, as always. And I think your nitpicks are right on. We've kind of shared some of our top nitpicks. Have we not shared your chief nitpick from the game on Sunday afternoon? Webradio at patriots.com. Ace Ticket Hotline is 508-543-7482. All right, let's sneak in one more timeout. We'll come back and continue with emails and got game superlatives to pass out here in the playbook.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only. Equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with cheese combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pabs! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pabs!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Also via the web, webradio@patriots.com, email address. Facebook today as well. Got some comments from Facebook we'll share with you here. Adam says, people like to watch men demonstrate their strength, dating back to the times of the Roman gladiators. Sport had descended from gladiators just without the death, a lot of the time. Anyways, my point is, if the NFL wasn't violent, we wouldn't enjoy it. And I think that was part of the point that I was making a little bit earlier. We as a species just enjoy the things that we can't physically do. We like seeing others do it. For some grotesque reason, we're drawn to it. That's why throughout the centuries we've been drawn to it, and the NFL is no different. The NFL is modern-day gladiators in the Roman Colosseum. It truly is. They are, in every sense of the word, 21st century gladiators. 20th century gladiators now in the 21st century. And so if we take away the violence, if we take away, you know, if we start legislating, which is going to lead then to over-legislating, look at our Congress, for instance, then what are we really going to be left with? Mush.
Why don't we just give them flags? It's not tackle. Just play flag football.
See, now, Doc, that's just, you know, that's exactly what I would expect from someone like you.
I mean, you know, I want the hit. I need the replay. I need the highlight.
you know, I don't disagree, but that's exactly how the players think too.
Maybe they should re-engineer the helmets and make them safer.
I don't know how you can do that. How are you going to re-engineer it? I mean, because if you make it any softer, then you're talking about head injuries as opposed to, you know, by the hit-E rather than or the hitter rather than the hit-E.
Just go with like a full like motorcycle helmet that comes down to your neck.
I think, you know, if you really want to make things all
who
things
the,
equal.
Who was the lineman? Or no, Ken Norton Jr. used to have something on the back of his shoulder pads that kind of prevented
the
his
neck,
head from going.
Yeah, the neck pad, the neck brace. Ken Norton used to wear that. Mike Singletary wore it in the past. I've seen a lot of linebackers that would keep their head from being, you know, jerked backwards. You know, maybe you have to put the neck collar, basically, is what it is. It's a neck collar. It's like a piece of styrofoam that goes between the small of the neck and the underneath side of the helmet.
Of course, then they'll have to change the horse collar rule because everybody's going to just pull them down by that.
And then you end up choking somebody. But you know what? We legislated pulling of hair pretty well. You can't pull hair, right? I mean, look at...
I think you can.
Can you pull hair?
Yeah. Palomalo's gotten grabbed.
Yeah, but I don't know that...
I didn't think they called a penalty on
him. Did they call a penalty?
I don't think so.
Hmm. See, I've always wondered about that. See, my coaches were always like, you know, hey, I can see your hair underneath your helmet. Get a haircut. We don't have that nowadays. All these guys, you know, with the Palomalu haircuts or they've got the dreadlocks going or whatever, and yeah, they're leaving themselves open for, I mean, hell, if I'm a defensive back, you know what I'm reaching for? Anything I can grab. And if that means a guy's locks are coming out of the back of his helmet, I'm grabbing it and I'm pulling his butt down.
Wait a second. Did you just say that your coach used to tell you that he could see your hair coming out of the back of your
helmet? Yes,
yes. Did you used to have a Troy Palomalu going on?
Nothing like that, no.
It was a mullet then.
No, it wasn't even a mullet. You got to remember, helmets back in the day were literally shells. That was without any padding.
You didn't wear a leather helmet, John. Come on.
Maybe that's what we should all go back to. It's leather helmets. They could all go around looking like Bronco Nagurski.
We could just play two-hand touch next week in San Diego.
I know.
Forget the flags. We don't want to get called for flag guarding. We're just going to
He touched me above the waist. He touched me above the waist. That's not a tackle. It's true. It's true. We're going to get to that at some point. We're going to get to that. No, you can't legislate the violent nature of the game. It's going to be hard to do. Which is why ultimately I think, you know, when you get into suspensions and, you know, you're opening up a can of worms that quite frankly I think is just going to lead to more problems. I think because it's a violent game, I believe that, you know, violent hits are going to occur. Unfortunate hits are going to happen, like the one that fell, Rutgers defensive tackle Eric LeGrand. Did you see that against Army this weekend? And really, that wasn't a bad hit. It was just a compression injury more than anything else. And now, you know, the poor kid is paralyzed from the neck down. Sad. Just sad. It happens in this game. You know, can we try? Yeah, I just think we're asking for too much. I think we're really asking for too much. Given the overwhelming, violent nature of the game, we're asking for too much overall. And I'm kind of washing over it all here. Yeah, I think we can probably do a job of legislating individual hits, as we talked about earlier, guys who launch and guys who clearly hit high as opposed to hitting level or hitting low. Launching period should probably be a flag. I'll give you that. I don't know if launching period, though, can mean an automatic suspension.
So would you have flagged Asante Samuel for the 2004 AFC Championship game against the Colts? Or, I'm sorry, it wasn't the championship game. But you know the play I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The snow when he just came over and just leveled, I want to say it was Reggie Wayne?
Yeah, I think it was Reggie.
But we showed that highlight in this building for years.
Yeah, it went nuts. And can we legislate that? No. See, I don't think we can.
I don't think Rodney Harrison was wrong. I think, you know, he's right. It's not about the fine. It's not about the paycheck. It's, look, if we deem that this hit was too much, you're going to miss the next game.
Yep. And I think that's what will end up happening. I think the NFL will ultimately reach that decision, and they'll say, you know, we're going to review all of these big, you know, blow-up hits. We're going to review them all, and if we deem that it was over the top, you're going to have to sit the next game.
But I also agree with Brandon Merriweather, what he said yesterday on EEI, that if Rodney Harrison was still playing on the field, he wouldn't have said that.
No. No, he wouldn't have. He's absolutely 110% right about that. 110% right.
Actually, in Brandon's words, he said, if Hot Rod was still playing.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's right. He's right.
My wife calls me Hot Rod.
Hot Rod. Alan Facebooked this. He says, I was very disappointed in Merriweather. It's one thing to go in hard and you just happen to hit someone, but he went in to intentionally hit that guy in the head. It was not the first time he tried it in the game. I think Belichick will have to have a word with him about that. I think a fine is warranted, but a suspension may be a little over the top. He also says he made a smart game situation, Belichick did, not to take the field goal at the end. He played the percentages. Why take a chance of kicking a field goal that was only 1 yard short of an NFL record and leave the possibility of it being blocked or landing short in return for a touchdown? Well, first of all, the return for the touchdown is ludicrous. That's just ludicrous. A Hail Mary was just as likely to succeed and left open the possibility of a pass interference penalty. He says, good decision from Belichick, in my opinion. Okay, Alan, that's fine. I don't think you'd have made much of a football coach, though. Be honest with you. I mean, sometimes football coaches have to make decisions based on their personnel. And you know your personnel can kick the field goal. Gostkowski wanted to kick the ball. His teammates wanted him to kick the ball because they've seen him kick the ball from that distance. And to wimp out all of a sudden and say, no, we can't make this because it might be returned for it might be blocked or it might get returned for a touchdown? Please, not buying that. Not buying that at all. I'm not buying it. Paul says, nitpicks for me would be the O struggling for most of the game, the D struggling early on, and the decision not to try the field goal at the end of the normal time. Join the club with that one, Paul. I really think it was worth going for and could easily have cost us in overtime. No question. No question. All right. Dead on about those things. Dead on about it. Get back to some of the emails as well. Brent in Chicago. John, head-to-head hits are illegal. They're just not called consistently by the officials. The NFL is not too violent. The men who choose to get paid to play a game with inherent risk are choosing that risk. No one needs to play football if they don't want to. Well, it's true that they are not called consistently. And that's why, again, we're going to be asking now the officials to legislate these hits a little bit more closely from now on. The NFL is going to get involved here. And I'm thinking, well, maybe we're going to start tangling ourselves up in more red tape from the officials. And I'm just not entirely certain that's the direction that this game needs to go. All right, Sam from Brighton on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Sam, you're in the playbook. What's shaking?
Hey, John, I just have one thing to say, and it's about the 62-yard field goal attempt.
Yep.
I think one thing you're forgetting is the Devin Hester kick return. You know, like a couple years back, wait under the uprights, and if the ball is short, that's what they mean by return it for a touchdown, not necessarily a block return for a touchdown.
Well, I understand that, but I actually think that that is even rarer than blocking it. First of all, you got to consider who your kicker is. He leads the league, or he's in amongst the league leaders in touchbacks because he kicks the ball through the end zone. So and he had the wind behind his back here, Sam. So if there was ever an opportunity for him to try this, it would have been that opportunity with 4 seconds left. Time would have expired by the time the ball left the end zone. I'm just thinking that, you know, it absolutely made no sense to me. Football requires a certain amount of guts and certainly not just physical guts, but, you know, the ability to make a call and stand by that call and take a chance on a decision. You have to take calculated risks. That would have been a calculated risk. Plus, I've talked to people who were down on the sidelines, okay, behind the bench, who heard the Patriots players urging the coaches to let him kick the ball.
Well, all right, well.
Okay, so beyond, yeah, thank you, Sam, appreciate that. Believe me, I totally get that. And, yeah, but obviously Devin Hester doesn't exist over on the other sideline. Now, if we were playing the Bears, which apparently the Patriots are later this year, and you're in a similar situation, and there's old Devin Hester waiting under the goalpost, I might think twice about not kicking it.
The Bears are what we thought they were.
So, sure. But the Ravens don't have Devin Hester. I got to tell you. I think that there's more of a chance of him making that field goal, better chance of him making that field goal than of the Ravens blocking it or of the Ravens returning it. That's the big nitpick that I have. Adam says, Adam in Orlando. John, first and foremost, an awesome win on Sunday. Now for a few nitpicks. Brady's duck and cover interception was terrible. He seems to have a few of those every year, and I don't understand why. If you're going to throw it up the middle, you better have it better, heave it better than that. I know Brady has the arm, but no excuses. Also, way too many drop passes. I know Hernandez is a rookie, but we could have ended the game potentially much sooner. It's very true. It's another minor nitpick, but both of those drops by Hernandez were really bad, and one of them was significantly bad, and the game could have been over with a lot sooner. Very, very true, Adam. Adam continues by saying, I know he'll work at it and not let us down again anytime soon. Other people had drops, but those stuck out to me because of the situation. By the way, I think we had at least six drops by the receivers on Sunday. At least six. And if we catch half of those, that game may not have even gone into overtime. He says, on a high note, I thought that Cunningham had a good game. Yes, Jermaine Cunningham, he did. Made his presence felt, and Spikes and Mayo had very solid efforts. Hopefully we can and should keep it rolling against a poor Chargers team. Go Pats. Agreed. Cunningham finally showed up. I think that's a great step in the right direction. Yes, and Mayo and Spikes were very solid in the middle. All good points. Sheila in Clearwater. John, it's good to have you back. I really enjoy the show and your willingness to discuss topics with the fans instead of just being a talking head. Sometimes we have to be talking heads, but that's the way it goes in this game. Thank you, Sheila. Anyway, I think that, yes, at times football can be too violent. I think that as far as suspensions for hits like that goes, they should make a rule that if there is a penalty, then that person should be required to sit out the next play. Then let the NFL review the play while the game continues. If the player is fined for the play, then they should be required to sit out a quarter of the next game. If it continues to happen, they should add a quarter for each time it happens after that. Losing a whole game is too harsh of a punishment, especially when it is not apparent if it was done on purpose. All right, that's a good point. I think that what you might be purporting here, though, Sheila, might be a little bit too hard to keep track of. It's almost like you'd have to have the hit police out there, you know, guarding, you know, and watching every hit and taking notes. Yeah. Yeah, oh, God, here come the hit police again. Oh, Lord.
Followed, of course, by the Wambulance.
Yeah, the Wambulance. I like it. So it's probably a little bit too much. Maybe she meant that. Maybe she was being facetious like that. I don't know. She says, I just think that the lesson learned would be better, learned better, without taking away from the game. And most players would learn better if there were their teammates that were saying, hey, cut the crap, which I think would happen if they were only losing a quarter at a time. Okay. You know what? That might enter into the equation. I certainly think you're going to stop things if the guys know that they're going to miss a game. But I also believe strongly, as I mentioned earlier in the program, I believe strongly in setting up a system like the NBA and or soccer have, like yellow card accumulation. If you have a hit accumulation like that, you're fined for it the first time, but if you get more than one in the same season, you're missing a game, which means you're also missing a game paycheck. Along with the additional fine that you've already been fined. That will start to resonate with players. But because of the human element in the game, I do think you have to leave the benefit of the doubt with the player. We can't crawl inside their heads. We don't know what they're thinking in that split second before they unload on somebody. Hell, the players themselves don't know that. That's ridiculous to think that we can legislate what a player's thought is in a millisecond. We can't do that. That's Big Brother is what that is. So here's a compromise. First time, you're fined, and you're fined harshly. $20,000 minimum, let's say, just for grins, or $25,000 minimum. If another hit similarly happens in the same calendar year, you still lose that $25,000, and you get a game suspension, which means you also lose a paycheck, which is going to probably add anywhere from, depending on who you are and what your contract is, it's going to be anywhere from $50,000 to maybe well over $200,000 that you're going to be whacked because you're missing the game. That will resonate with the players. Lauren in Charleston, South Carolina. Was at the game this past weekend. Really liked the new stuff that was used to get the crowd into it more. I know this issue has been discussed on numerous occasions, but as a season ticket holder, it's my belief that it is the red seat section. Yes, the club seats. I did notice that most of the time people in the red seat sections were in those seats, but the weather was nice this past weekend, so let's see what happens when the weather turns cold. Absolutely, Lauren. Lauren's in Charleston, South Carolina, so I'm glad you came up for the game. You're absolutely 110% correct. It's the club seats. It's those that sit on their hands. It's those that go in and wine and dine and then come out whenever they feel like it. Absolutely right. Those are the problems. Not much we can do about it. I don't think those club seats are going anywhere anytime soon, nor are the luxury boxes. Sean says, John, although I'm not for crippling people, I'm kind of happy Merriweather did what he did. I would rather a tight end like Keller, Gates, or Clark have some kind of fear going over the middle rather than just leisurely running over the middle and catching a 20-yard pass for a first down. Maybe it's good to have some feared DBs. We have a virgin defense that should develop a nasty, hard-hitting attitude instead of playing off the defenders 5 yards. You know, Sean, I happen to agree with you. You know, we had that when we had Rodney, and we all said, again, and I mentioned this earlier in the program, we all said, you know, Rodney's the kind of guy that you love to have on your team, but you hate to have him on somebody else's team when you're playing him. And why can't Brandon Merriweather be that kind of guy for us? And maybe that's what he's aspiring to be. He did learn under, you know, Harrison for a year before, you know, Rodney retired. So maybe that's the possibility. Chris sends this. He says, I think you both touched on the Merriweather hits exactly right. We loved having Rodney on the team, and he was deemed a dirty player by everyone in the league. We loved his big hits, and not all of them were legal. Merriweather was 100% trained by Rodney his first year or two. He has become that big hitter a team needs. I do believe that an illegal hit should be punished accordingly. But to hear fans say Merriweather should be removed from the team is just absurd. And I think the NFL is violent by nature. I'm not sure it is more violent so much as it is more televised, and guys are bigger and also faster and stronger than they were in days past. All right, Chris, fair enough. Good email. Kind of right there on the cusp of what we've been talking about. And by the way, Warren sends this in London. He says, the yellow card rule, talking about the soccer yellow card rule and how maybe the NFL should try to instigate something similar. He says, rule is as follows. Two yellows in a game, a single game, means you're sent off. During the season, if you get 7 yellow cards, you get a match ban. They do play 38 games. Or in the NFL, you could reduce it to like 3 or something like that. All right, Pete Shepard, what do you think?
Now, you're talking about, you know, flagrant fouls? Or you're talking about illegal contact calls?
I think we're talking about flagrant fouls, you know, the type of hits that we saw Merriweather and James Harrison basically partake in this past Sunday.
Yeah, I think
there was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Thank you. Yeah, I think there's something maybe to that. If you get, say, 5 personal foul calls against you of any nature, no matter what it is during a season, I think maybe that could suspend the man.
Or flagrant
suspend
hit.
The gentleman for a match.
Yeah.
As I say,
flagrant hit. If you're
flagrant
doing,
hit.
Flagrant hit.
All right. Any
first time.
Any personal foul.
First time, you know, fine. Yeah. And then, I don't know that you can say with any personal foul, because I think some personal fouls do come in the heat of battle and are unintentional.
Well, you can get personal foul for yelling at the ref. But
well,
maybe,
exactly.
You know.
So that's why I'm saying we have to try to take as much as we can the intent out of the equation. Because you can't legislate intent.
No.
That's absolutely ludicrous to think that we try to do that. And I think that's where people will get lost here. So, all right, first, you know, big flagrant hit. Let's say Merriweather, you know, pops Antonio Gates, for lack of a better phrase, and he elevates and he launches, and it's an above-the-shoulder contact.
Boy,
all right,
what a hit that would be.
Okay, first of all, you know, if the official throws a flag on the play, he's done for the game. He's out. He probably gets fined, and then he probably has to lose a paycheck on top of it.
But I don't know if I'm willing to go as far as ejecting the player right there on the spot. I don't know.
Well, that rule is in place now.
No, I know that.
You can. Under the eyes of the officials.
You can
be ejected for a flagrant foul in a football game right now.
But I got to tell you, if they're not going to do it for the hit Merriweather put on Heap, then I'm not sure when there is. What does it take?
That's why they're not legislating it the way the NFL says they should be legislating it, which is why you can't bite more
because the
you
corrupt
can
officials.
Chew.
Well, as my buddy Fred Smirlos used to say all the time.
Might be.
I mean, are there anything? I
might
mean,
be.
Most. I mean, I think the NFL is a little bit better than the NBA. The NBA is a joke, and as you know, John, it's a joke. The NBA for officiating, and the NFL is, you know, there's so many subjective calls that shouldn't be that way. But you know, we digress. It's you know, it's always. If you're not going to eject a player for that hit Merriweather put on Heap, then I don't know when. What does it take? You know, when does it happen? I'm not sure. That's why I think it's very difficult for the official to throw out a person for a quote-unquote vicious hit like that.
But. Yeah, yeah. What's coming up on the show today?
Well, lots coming up today. Lots coming up today on the show. We're going to break down the Patriots' win, obviously, a little bit. Talk about San Diego. And for those of you who think the Chargers are in trouble, yeah, but they're in trouble every year, and they always seem to go on these 10- and 11-game winning streaks. I know their team's a little bit different in the past, but I wouldn't count the San Diego Chargers as dead and out just yet.
I wouldn't.
I've seen it too many times, and, LT or no LT.
This is about the time of the year, though, that they struggled early in the season last few years.
Yeah.
This is about the time of the year that they start turning it on.
They win 10 or 11 in a row. They do. It happens all the time. Now, again, no Merriman, no LT, no Vincent Jackson, but we'll see. You know, I'm not ready to count the Chargers out yet. Chris Jenkins from the San Diego Union Tribune is going to join us on the show, columnist, talking about the Chargers and the Patriots. And I think the coach, head coach Bill Belichick, will be checking in today at some point.
Nice.
So I'm looking forward to that. Not sure what time yet. You know, he's got his game planning strategy going for tomorrow, his first practice tomorrow. But he is going to join us today, either by phone or in the studio, for a few minutes.
So. Outstanding.
I'm very
excited. You and your buddy Bill.
And how in the hell did your Texas Longhorns beat Nebraska on Saturday? How the hell did that happen? How do you lose to UCLA like that and then beat Nebraska on the road?
I'll give you four words. They defended Taylor Martinez.
Yes.
Okay. That freshman who's a stud talent. He's probably the fastest player in all of college football. Mm-hmm. They basically shouted him everywhere on the field. And it was a great game plan that Will Muschamp put together. They just weren't letting Martinez out of their sights, and they knocked his butt out of the game.
One quick BCS. No, I love your thoughts on this too. I'm sorry. Call me crazy. I think Boise State's getting screwed. I'm sorry. I mean, I understand. I just think they're getting screwed. And I would
crazy.
I think the BCS is.
I think that a lot of people are having a hard time realizing that Boise State may be a good football team, even though they are playing in the WAC, and because they don't play as tough a schedule as, say, you know, an LSU
or
an
SEC
Auburn
team.
Or any team
that?
In the SEC day in and out. Yeah, and I think that happens to be the truth. But they have done what they've been asked to do. They can't really do a whole heck of a lot about playing in the conference they're in. Although they have done something. They've moved to what would deemed to be a stronger conference by going to the Mountain West next year. So they've tried to move that direction.
What they need to do is take New Mexico and New Mexico State and just move them away. Back to Pop Warner, since they don't want to field Division One teams.
Can we relegate?
I mean, they are embarrassing.
Can we relegate some teams to D2? No?
I mean, they are those two teams. I don't know if people. I'm sure people. I mean, those scores are freaking embarrassing.
They're bad.
I mean, everybody who plays them is unless when they play each other. I mean, then it's
they're bad.
And San Jose State is close.
Good stuff.
All right.
Good stuff.
But lots coming up today with the Patriots.
Awesome.
I'm very excited.
We'll be listening. Yeah. Thanks. I want to leave you with this. Then a couple of superlatives from the game. First of all, Brady passed for 292 yards. He's now won 23 consecutive regular season starts at home. He has passed Hall of Famer John Elway for the second longest streak of consecutive regular season home wins as a starting quarterback. Who holds the record?
Brett Favre.
Yes, I know. Pete had it, but his microphone was off. Brett Favre has the longest such streak.
Brett Favre.
25 straight wins.
And Brady has an 18-game streak in there, too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He has two streaks of 18-plus.
So he can, in essence, break his own streak again.
And well, he has already broken his streak once.
Yes.
Now he's going to shoot for Favre's. If he can win two more, he'll tie it. If he wins three more at home, he'll break it without a loss. Next opportunity will be against Brett Favre.
But I want to watch Brett Favre.
We're all going to watch Brett Favre.
Oh, God.
Okay, and the final thing I'm going to leave you with here happens to do with a question that I asked on Facebook earlier today. How tall is Danny Woodhead? How big is he? What would you guess? He's listed what is he listed as? 5'9"? He's listed as 5'9" in the roster.
He looks about 5'5" to me.
Okay.
Looks about 5'5".
If he's 5'5", that's probably stretching it because I had a chance to stand next to him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a 15, almost 16 year old son who's 5'7".
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's taller than Danny Woodhead. Taller than Danny Woodhead. So let me say this about Woodhead. He reminded me a little bit. I saw some similarities with the way he ran and the way that Ray Rice ran. Now, I'm not going to compare him to Ray Rice. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Because Rice is an explosive. He's got huge, legs. Yeah. I mean, he's a great running back. But Woodhead runs similarly because he gets low to the ground. He's already only 5'5", people. 5'5", okay? And when he gets down low, you're going to have to get on the ground to bring the guy down. So he gets down low. He has good balance, and he can cut on a dime, which means you know, we saw some of that shiftiness that he had in between the tackles, which mean he is going to, when they can run those trap blocks for him and give him the opportunity to get a little bit of a crease, he can do damage. That's what made him effective as the Division II Heisman at Chadron State,
right,
Nebraska.
Yep.
That's why he ran for all the yardage he did. Again, it was Division II, but the fact is he was successful. And you're seeing that he can have some success, albeit on a limited basis, in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, Danny says he's, you know, he's listed in the thing in the media as 5'7".
Okay.
But he's not 5'7".
He's not 5'7".
He's not 5'7".
My son is 5'7". Okay? He's not quite 16, and he is taller than Danny Woodhead. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Did you see the guy in the stands who was wearing the 39 jersey, the hard hat, and had a 2x4 screwed into it? And on the top of the 2x4, it said Woodhead.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
I'm telling you, the kid is unbelievable. He's all heart.
It works. It works. All right. Pete Shepard Show is coming up next. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel tomorrow, kids.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.